We have the director, CCRD, that is Rosella Nika. Thank you. And we also have the chief director of IDD, Mr. Damanova. Is that you're here and you'll also be staying with us for the oversight? I just saw oversight visit here. Damanova. All right. Well, surely there was just some misunderstanding on that one. Then we've got with us the National Gambling Board. The co-administrator, is that right, or the chief operating officer administrator? What does the CEO stand for? Co-administrator, Mr. Bellani, and your colleague, another co-administrator, Ms. Kongwa. Thank you very much. And we'll greet the regulator after you, because I think you'll be coming in first this morning, right? And then if we can get through to the committee itself, and that is looking here, and the apologies we have. We have got apologies from the Honourable Advocate Elvis, party commitments for the whole week. Well, we do have a problem with someone who is representing, is it the smaller parties, as it were. I think we need to ensure that when that happens, and that's why I'm putting this on record, that such a person is replaced, because such a person would be representing about five parties, political parties here in Parliament, and I'd appreciate it if we can take this up with the Chair of Chairs in that respect. Then we have an apology. The Honourable Mkongi will be arriving late. And those are the only two apologies I have here. Right. Now, if we can look at the agenda here, due to start at 9, it's just going on to 10 past 9. And everything, I see the different groupings are here. We would expect to finish at 1300. And then we would then be expecting to depart on our first oversight visit, and in the Western Cape, the issue of clothing and textiles, we were aware, was a huge issue some years back and has stabilised since then, I believe. But it'll be for us to check that one out ourselves and to make the necessary inquiries, because I believe the funds we allocated to them were used on equipment. It'll be an opportunity to see for ourselves what sort of equipment it was and how much it cost. So on that note then, can we please have somebody to propose adoption of the agenda? Thank you, Honourable Mantash, seconded by the Honourable Bienge. Right. Briefing by the National Gambling Board on their annual report 2013-2014 and on their first quarter's financial and non-financial performance. What we would appreciate from you is being able to link those figures to the non-financial performance itself and not just to breeze over the figures, because the figures don't mean anything unless they are substantiated. So I'm sure that's exactly what's going to be happening. We'll give you a short space of time to do that with us, so do go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, Mrs. Hobbs, and the Honourable Committee members and your colleagues. My name is Tumelo Balene. As alluded to, the co-administrator at the National Gambling Board. I'm with my colleague, Caroline Wanga. If you look at the content of the presentation, we've tried to condense as far as we could so that we don't then go into the detail of the report that has been tabled before this honorable committee. As indicated, Chair, may I just say in the opening remark that we started as co-administrators from September. We actually now heading for the second month. it is our sincere hope and belief that we're going to assist as far as it's possible to turn around the issues of challenges that are pointed out in the report. Without further ado, let me just indicate that I'm not going to really read the slide, but I'm just going to quickly talk to the slide to give the context in how we've prepared it, and make an upfront acknowledgement that there were challenges, and there are challenges if you look at our report in terms of some of the figures, as you already shared, that we need to link that to the performance, especially around the expenditure and how it occurred. If we then move with that, the mandate of NGB, I think, is a well-known sector by this honorable committee. I'm not going to regurgitate that and waste a lot of time on that, but I think it was important that we just allude to. The values as a bit cluttered, which could have been condensed, are contained in that session, and those are the values of the NGB, which we believe we need to work very hard to make us realize and live them, as some of them are quite critical for us as an entity to be living that, the professionalism and many other things. But I think the quality of relationships should be one of the things that we work on in the entity. In the next slide, we just briefly talking to the overview in the report, but also just focusing on what was in 2013, 2014, and the thrust of that annual performance report in terms of what is that we were intending to achieve. And obviously, in a further detail, we'll then talk to have we achieved that, if we have, to what extent, and what were the successes around it. So I'm not going to read the bullet points as is, but I think it's important that to say that was that overview. And if you go to the main report on page 4, you will particularly see those details. And we have really tried to go as concise as it's possible to ensure that we meet with the time requirements. And then this slide was really saying we have considered the rest of the annual report as tabled, and the details in terms of all those part A up to part F and what they are covering. And then out of that, you'll see, Chair, when we go to the next or further down with the presentation, there are areas of importance that we focus on, and that would be around the AG's report and the findings, and then we'll then talk to what the challenges have been and to how are we intending to respond to the challenges in this role that we've been given as the co-administrators. So the next one really is the legislative mandate as contained. And when I was talking to my colleague and we were dealing with the legislative mandate, which is the skill in terms of being a legal person than I have, we thought this should have actually been a bit more concise than that, just go and zoom in into the current act as it's established. If you look at our report, it basically takes you back from where you come from in terms of the repealed act and where we are now in terms of the current act, Act 7 of 2004. Chair, as I say, I would really want to talk to the context of our presentation and then dwell much on the slides that we think would be important for this committee to consider. And then when we move to the next one, you would see it's very thin highlights of 2013-14 of what we were able to, as an organization, achieve. My belief is we basically can actually achieve more than that, but this is what then came, and we particularly just referred to those pages where a bit of more details are outlined, so that we don't then dwell too much into that thin achievements that we have made in 2013, 2014, and then going further, I think it's more than the details in terms. now the actual performance. And you will see we've also just taken those targets that were the targets that we were able to contribute on that key highlights, which even if they are not mentioned in detail here, the key highlights or the successes. But this planned targets or planned goals that the NGB wanted to achieve was basically saying these are the areas that we've achieved. And further down in the presentation, I'm going to talk to what was the rate of the achievement when we did this assessment. And that will talk to, in terms of what we've spent, have we really achieved in line with what we were supposed to achieve. So without going into too much detail, I think one of the key objectives there is really to participate and contribute in the harmonization of a dynamic legislative environment in the industry or the gambling industry. And then we saw that on fact the objective was really to ensure that there's a participation in contribution to the amendment of the legislation process of the legislation of 2004. So on that we were able to provide the input, and you will see there we quickly just talk to the targets that in terms of actual that have been met. And the next slide I think is also talking to further targets. If we can just then move to the next one, you'll see further targets, but as I indicated, one would rather not spend too much time into this, because there are those that we have not met, but we need to just say how are we going to then respond to those. The slide thereafter would be talking to further indicators, a bit of detail in that, and I remember when we were having a discussion with our colleagues in the department, they would say, this is a bit of too operational, and at that time that's how the annual performance plan it was coined, framed, crafted. We need to lift it up a bit to a more strategic level in terms of what we should be presenting to this committee. The next one is talking to, if we go to the next one, it talks to what I said earlier when I was saying, on the second slide of overview, I was making reference to a lot of details in the annual report itself, which indicate the certain parts of the report and what they are talking to. But I did say there are those that we felt we need to lift up for presentation to the committee, and that is what comes on page 53 to 56, and the Auditor General's report. And I need to just say in the status there, the NGB has released an unqualified report. However, what is of concern to us as the co-administrators is the fact that the matters of emphasis that are coming into the report says we need to really check up the act to ensure that we do not have a situation where it is an unqualified report, but you have a lot of very stinging matters of emphasis. So it is our commitment that we are also putting on record in front of the committee that the next time we do a presentation, we've already developed the audit metrics to follow up on this, to correct the methods that should, in the first place, some of them, if you look at them really, in terms of the processes, the procedure, and the issues around leadership, we shouldn't have been having that kind of findings or methods of emphasis, rather. And if you look at them also in line there, that's what also cost, and I'll talk to that in a more detail when I talk to the financial. It was has cost the Auditor General taking a bit of time in finalizing, and that has actually resulted in additional costs, which you could have avoided. You will see when we talk to what the reasons for variance are on our financials for that financial year was basically because of that. And then, yes, the there's another notice of a bit of concern. It's around the financials, that we have experienced this situation of having a deficit, which was mainly, if you look at the reasons, and the reasons are just below this slide, it was mainly because of a bit of an overcommitment in terms of the operating lease, which is our leasing agreement with regards to the building that we are in. And we are, as administrators, in engaging with the mother department to work around a solution. And it is in our focus that we deal with that operation lease, because it does have a rippling effect. It's a matter that started in 2012, 2013, and then in 2013-14 is now heading to this situation where we actually realize that we would be in further trouble if we don't really arrest it at this point and ensure that that expenditure is properly managed. I believe that in any, and in government should also be the same thing, the same with the entities. In any successful operation or business operation, you have to manage your cost very effectively. And in managing the cost that you're saying, you need to be more efficient. So you focus on your efficiency mechanism to make sure that you're efficient. So that's one area that we're going to focus a lot on. I'm not going to talk to those figures in that detail. As Chairperson, you've indicated, we need to then place a link between these figures and how we've actually performed. Some of these variance analysis, as indicated, the first one, that figure of 4,050,000 as a result of that overcommitment of 2013-14 I've talked to. There were also an issue, I know that is of a challenge that we are dealing with, and that issue is with regards to the personnel costs. If you look at the personnel budget itself, we have not overspent, but in the operating expenses, which is where the temporary staff was actually placed, because they were placed through a procurement process, so they had to be paid for in terms of that process. And then the expenditure is allocated there, and that's why you see that variance coming through there. I've already talked to the Auditor General when I was talking about the issue of some delays in dealing with the responses, and then that resulted in. And this was mainly, as I said, around the matters of emphasis that the Auditor General has raised. And then, as a result, then the fees went up, and then we basically had a negative variance around that. And then the challenges, without really reading them in that sequence that they are tabled, I need to just mention, Chair, that the issue of delays around the sittings of council, and which is linked to the next one, of that dealing with the compliance with regard to the provincial licensing authority, where matters of compliance have been picked up and needs to be tabled at the National Gambling Policy Council, which the minister said. It has been addressed to an extent that even in the policy or the directive, policy direction wants to address that in terms of the issue of quorum. So it's something that is already been attended to, not only from our side as an entity, but at the higher level of the mother body or the mother department. And the issue that we are focusing on and dealing with is the high staff turnover, which we need to take care of. If you look at the situation, when we arrived, Chair, now in September, around the 11th, the 12th of September, we submitted an observation report to say we are coming in as administrators. There are measures to attend to and make sure that we turn the entity within 6 months around. What are the things that we have to focus on? We did that report which we submitted to the department, and in that report, one of the areas that we've picked up and that needs very urgent attention is not only the staff turnover, but it was also a very high vacancy rate. And I know the issue of vacancy rate might not be coming in the 2010-2013 report coming that clear, but when we do our first quarter report, you will see we took into that, and we are already putting into place the mechanisms to address that. As well as the it was also linking and attaching at an operational level the issue of reporting and the reliability of the reports that we are actually producing. One other area that really worries us is the issue of irregular expenditure, as well as the budget constraint. But with budget constraint, we're coming, especially myself, we're coming from a background that says budgets and resources are not unlimited. You know that for a fact, and because of them not being unlimited, there will always be budget constraints. The question is, how do we improve around our planning processes? How do we improve around implementing? How do we become effective and efficient in dealing with this challenge of budget constraints? Because there's no situation where you will be able to say you have an abundance of resource, both human and financial. So whatever we are doing there in strengthening you, and you'll see our intervention that we are proposing, but we're not only proposing, we're also supporting the Chief Financial Officer to come up with this very practical. And as you can see, it's not a lot of things that we say we're going to focus on in dealing with the challenges. We want to deal with the more important ones so that the ones that are as a result of the main challenge get addressed in that process, because once you don't have the challenge, you basically would have one half of the battle. Just in conclusion on the annual report, Chair, part of the conclusion I think I've touched on with our appointment to NGV. We are very much aware of the policy and legislative reform that is in progress in dealing with the amendment of the legislation, the National Gambling Act. We are very much aware of the outcome of the agency rationalization project that was undertaken by the department, its outcome and how it's affecting us and the other entities as well. But in this particular case, we're saying we need to then recognize this and basically work in collaboration, very close collaboration with the DTI. We need to also deal with the issues of internal focus in terms of the provision of the gambling policy that we always have to give advice to. And then we need to focus a lot on what when Minister was doing the work about during this financial year. We need to focus on ensuring that we on top of the issue of keeping the social impact, economic impact on of gambling on the communities where this activity is taking place. And we need to be more effective in terms of our compliance. One of the challenges in the staff issues that we're going to address is that the core must be properly resourced in terms of the human capital, in terms of the skill and the technical skills that are required there. For instance, at this point in time, we do not have a manager, although there's a position of gaming technologies. It's a very specialized area. We know we need that particular individual there to be able to focus and be effective in terms of the mandate of the organization. And strategically, as I indicated, we need to just ensure that we then reposition the entity as per the instruction of the department and the minister. Not because of that, only that, but because it is important for the entity to justify its existence. I think this is just our concluding remarks as administrators, but also just our commitment to say We sincerely believe that we will be able to assist, and we are quite grateful that we have been given this opportunity to be leading the entity in this critical time of turning it around. Thank you.
Rest of us, and that is your presentation. Well, the positive aspect about it is that it's concise, and certainly from a point of keeping us in touch with the presentation, it was useful to allocate page numbers, etc. That is appreciated, but I'm sure that there are a number of questions and comments the committee itself would like to make. Is there anyone else coming in? Anyone from, say, DTI that would like to comment before we raise our questions, make our comments? Right. I'm not sure if Tuesday just seems to be like Monday, but it's a very quiet day suddenly here in Parliament. Right. Honourable MacPherson, Honourable Hill Lewis, Honourable Liu Yenge, Honourable Mantash, Honourable Kornhoff, in that order, please.
Thank you, Mr. Bellini. I think you had the unfortunate task of trying to tell a family member that someone had passed away, but you weren't quite sure how to do it. And the big tragedy that you seemed to sort of skirt around was actually why the board was sacked. That's what we want to know. We want to know why you are here as administrators and why the board was sacked and what was involved in that whole issue. I have a couple of reasons or thoughts myself, but I'd like to hear that from you. But then I'd also like to turn to the, I always keep saying that, when we see entities that are problematic, they always come and tell us how wonderful, things are going and how they achieved all their targets. But in reality, things are not good. And I want to particularly zero in on under the key actions that relate to, and you've put here, the preparation of mid-year financial statements, etc. I want to suggest, that these really should be the very basics of governance and internal controls. And it concerns me that, for an entity to come in and highlight, what they should be doing. I mean, it should be taken as granted that that is what they are doing. And I think something that we need to get to the bottom of is these leases. 4 million and 45 over expenditure, 117%. I want to hear from you, Mr. Bellini, what your thoughts are on this. Have you started looking into them? What do they relate to? Who are the leases with? Is there any impropriety suggested in the awarding of those leases? I think the problem with the gambling board up to now is that they have been so inward focused that they've actually forgotten what they're supposed to be doing, and that they should be outward focused. And I think that you have an incredible challenge in turning that around. We have a number of issues that are going on in the gambling industry, and the gambling board just seems to be quiet because they're so inward focused on themselves and ensuring that their bread is buttered, as opposed to ensuring that gambling is sufficiently regulated and that people that are exposed to gambling are in fact protected. And certainly an issue that we've been looking at is the proliferation of these electronic bingo terminals. And it's been quite sad to see how up until this point, and still, the gambling board has been incredibly silent on these. And in fact, putting proposals to them, we have called for a moratorium from the minister to them. And I think that that's something that the gambling board should be saying. It's important. until such time as the department has come up with sufficient amended legislation and framework for these. This is what I'm talking about when I'm saying you're inward focus as opposed to being outward focus. That's all from me at this point, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable McPherson. Honourable Hilders.
Thank you, Chairperson. Use this one, Honour. And thank you to the administrators. Let me say, from our perspective, the first that we heard about the suspension of the board was in the media. So we haven't been briefed on the reasons for the suspension, and we really don't know what the core reasons were. So for us, it sounds very fishy and suspicious, and we'd like to know exactly why the board was suspended. What exactly were the reasons given for that suspension?
Right, and I'm going to stop you just there for just a minute, Honourable Hilders, and you may continue afterwards, because I realise you were not here at the meeting where this was addressed, where I addressed this issue, which you have just raised about the media. And I made this very, very clear, because it was raised by your colleague, this particular issue, that in fact we had earlier cancelled certain meetings, postponed meetings of this committee much earlier to ensure that we would have time available for training and for oversight. And so when I was informed in writing as chair of the committee, we were not meeting on the Thursday or Friday. But as soon as we did meet on the Tuesday, I made members aware of that. But meanwhile, of course, the newspapers published it either on Friday or Saturday or Sunday. So just so that you are aware of that, I was in fact informed in writing to brief the committee on that.
I understand we were briefed in writing, but not the specific reasons.
No, we weren't given the specific reasons, but rather that the minister would address these reasons to us. Because I think what you have now, that the person who suspended them would have been the executive, you see, and not anyone else. And I think that's something that we have to be aware of. We have requested the minister to take us into his confidence, and the earliest we will be briefed on that is the 6th of November, fully. But we certainly cannot expect a co-administrator here to be providing us with this, when in fact it is the minister who suspended that board. I do regard this as a serious matter, and in reading just what the content specialist has given us, it's quite clear that this is a serious issue. And even prior to that, I think you may have been away, but your colleague was here, the Honourable McPherson, when the Auditor General made us aware of certain challenges. So we share your concern, but if you would proceed.
I really do think the administrator can brief us on that. We don't have to wait until the 6th of November for the minister to come, you know, 2 months after the fact to brief us on why he did it. I'm sure the administrators and the other members of the DTI, that perhaps the chief operating officer, are aware of the reasons for the suspension, and they should brief us. That's not to say it's on their shoulders. We understand they're the administrators who are there to fix it, but they must surely be aware of the reasons. Otherwise, I'm not sure how they know what to fix. So we can be briefed on it today, and I'd like to know specifically what those reasons are. Secondly, on the lease, I mean, you know, if it is the lease, that's one thing, but then that must really speak to impropriety, because you don't cancel, you don't suspend.
I would prefer it if we just leave Mr. Hilders to complete, Honourable Liyenge, because I have already indicated that this will not be addressed by the co-administrators. Yes. No, let him continue. Thank you.
But Chair, I don't understand why this can't be addressed by the co-administrators. They are obviously aware of the reasons why the board is suspended. Why can't they take us into their confidence?
Honourable Hilders, I have already made a ruling. The only thing you can do now is object to the ruling to the Speaker. I've made unfortunately is only available on the 6th of November, and he will be addressed. We will be addressed and taken into his confidence. He would like to share all of these reasons with us.
Can you please advise me in terms of which rule you are allowed to instruct the presenters not to answer my question?
Part of the top of the commitment that they will rise to the occasion as they have started. Is the environment in the institution now conducive for you to actually rise to the occasion? You might have touched on some issues in your challenges, but you must be open enough to us, because we don't necessarily clearly refer to say this is wrong and that is we are not supposed to have done 1, 2, 3, 4. Put your issues as they are, so that we can advise and maybe lobby more support for you in order to achieve your targets. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Honorable Li Yenge, Honorable Kuenhoff. Mansha. Thank you, Chairman. Some issues that I wanted to raise have been raised, but there's just one that I think, or one or two that I think the presenters may respond to. I am also concerned about the issue of the operating lease, and would love to understand whether this situation will change in the near future. In the 2013-14 financial year. Again, they say they have temporary staff, which for them is the one of the causes for the over expenditure. And one would ask, why temporary staff? And if you say you have the temporary staff, who would you get the skills that you say you need? And on the tenth bullet on their page 34, they say the extra cost for audit were caused by non-submission of information to the AG timely. And whose responsibility is that? Have you taken steps against that person who has caused you extra cost for the AG's performance? Thank you.
Roman Tash. Honorable Kuenhoff.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the successes, you mentioned anti-money laundering and counter-terrorism financing controls. You know, I just want to know why you highlight that as a success. You know, is it an interaction? Is there any comparative figures to a previous year why you think that is a success? And are you happy with the where we are with regard to this, and is there room for further progress? And then also on the board, I just want to know how is the remuneration is working for the board. Is it per meeting? And if it is per meeting, what is the amount? And then secondly, with regard to travel and expenses, is there any code with regard to what you can fly? Do you normally fly economy or business? Is there any codes with regard to which hotels you can use and which group cars you can rent? If there are no codes, why not? Because I think the Minister of Finance have asked for that, you know, quite a number of years ago.
That takes care of everyone from our side. Just for the record, the co-administrators should appreciate they can't be instructed not to respond, but I happen to know that it isn't an executive decision that was taken, because that's what I was informed in writing about. So if you would, did you have your hand up there? Yes. Honourable Jody, Honourable Bob.
Thank you, Chair. Just in response to the issue that you are raising, the Minister has taken several executive decisions, and he has indicated that he does want the opportunity to come and brief the entire committee. So that's the information that we've been given So I don't think we would have the detail that we'd be able to sufficiently respond to all of the questions. What we can do is we can raise this with the minister and ask him to respond in writing, and we will ensure that that response comes to the committee as soon as we can.
Thank you. This is what I thought would be the best, to get a written response if we can't get the information here. Yes, certainly, Honourable McPherson.
So just a point of clarity, there is nothing preventing Mr. Delaney from responding to our questions of why the board was suspended. There's nothing legally or procedurally in this committee stopping him from doing so. Can I get clarity on that?
There's nothing legally preventing him at all. As I pointed out, it was an executive decision, and the minister would like to brief us on the matter. But there is nothing legally...
So just to follow up, so he can respond to our question on why the board was suspended.
He can respond if he knows. To the two co-administrators. Just a minute. Honourable Mantosh.
I am not sure, Chair, if the question raised by my colleague here overrides your ruling that you made initially, that the co-administrators are not executives and they should not be responding to the executive question. I'm not sure if this is an override to what is wrote on, and if it is permissible that we do that as a committee.
As I pointed out, one is obliged to point out to the department and so on how we are structured constitutionally. The executive is responsible for certain things, the administration for others, and I have pointed that out to them. Thank you, Mr. Bellani.
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable committee members. The question of the suspension of the board, I do not have the details. And as I think has been alluded to, it's an executive decision that we were instructed to then co-administrate. And what I have is a letter that has appointed me to co-administrate with Cellular. That's my response on that one, Chair. I'm not sure if I could then continue respond to the others, which I will also ask my colleague to add on some. And probably the other response, Chair, that I was going to have on that is my colleagues from the DTI would like to respond, but I'm aware that the GCO has already responded to that. Being allowed, Chair, thank you for the opportunity. In terms of the issue of internal controls in the entity, we fully agree to the honourable member that these are the basics that we need to go back to, and if those basics are there, obviously our issues of governance will not have as much of the stinging matters of emphasis as we have, and that's our focus area to improve those. What we are currently looking at in this short space of time that we are in, we've looked at what policies are there, what policies are being applied in the entity, how aligned are they to the prescripts of the Public Finance Management Act and all the guiding documents around the governance issues. And we agree, if we go back to just the basics in terms of internal controls, everything should be able to turn around. And the issue of the lease commitment, as I said, it has an element of funding that it was not sufficient for that lease. However, the commitment was taken on it, which resulted in an overcommitment. It is correct that, Chair, we are looking into it as part of the exercise of really evaluating everything. And if I need to mention again, in terms of the observation report that we've written to the Minister, on our arrival, the two that were there, we have mentioned that. We have had an engagement with the DTI around it, and we are also looking at the other sister organizations for subletting all the possible exit into a commitment that is an overlay. So the matter is receiving attention from ourselves. At this point in time, we cannot say whether any untoward has happened to it until a full investigation has been done on it, and then we can then report in terms of the investigation that we've done. As being focused internally, I think we've also indicated that the area of the mandate of the organization is the one that was not sufficiently resourced in terms of the human resources. And because of that, there's been a challenge. For instance, on our arrival, we've already addressed one of the issues that will help us to not only be internally focused, but to deal with the mandate as it is, which is that we need to address the issues of gambling in the country. And we have acquired the services of a stakeholder manager within the entity. So, and the other intervention that we looked at and we wanted to exercise is to engage with the DTI where there's capacity within the DTI on a temporary basis because of the time that is given to us. We need to turn things around as quick as is possible. So we've approached DTI where we think we need to collaborate with them, as we indicated in the presentation, but not only collaborate, also to get assistance from DTI on certain areas, especially on the issues of compliance, that area of compliance, which is actually the focus of the DTI. So we agree with the issues of not being internally focused so that we focus on executing the mandate as determined by the Act. And this would also just deal with our relationship with the PLAs, the Provincial Licensing Authority, and the issue of proliferation of bingos where some provinces have actually started rolling out. And that's the matter where we're talking about. One of the challenges that is now being addressed at NGPC is that of issues of compliance that could not be tabled because the NGPC wasn't sitting as it should because of quorum issues. However, we propose that when the members are available or any other MECs are delegated, then ministers convince the council, and then decision taken that should be binding to the province. So we are looking at all those issues around proliferation and the issue of also legal compliance. We're strengthening the legal department within the entity precisely to deal with that. I think there was an emphasis here also whether there's anything untoward with regards to the lease. I think I've responded to it, hopefully sufficient, that a more sufficient response would be with regards to after having done and get the facts, because you don't want to go on assumptions and suspicions and then you find, yes, this was probably an honest mistake, but then we should then focus on how we correct. If it was not, who is responsible, and then take the necessary steps. The issue of the remuneration of the board, there's a rate that is determined for the board sittings and preparation. The travel costs are covered by the NGT, and then the accommodation when they are accommodated for meeting purposes. And I think what has really raised the issue of expenses around the board fees was the number of meetings that were introduced. And yes, there is a cost containment directive from National Treasury, which the DTI adopted and also communicated to all of us as entities, and we have to adhere to that. There have been, I need to acknowledge, areas and challenges in some of the expenditure there where we have picked, but we're going deeper into finding out why that was violated, where a more expensive hotel might have been used, or a meeting instead of using a government premises or another entity premises was not preferred, or it could have been an issue where that was not available and the meeting having been scheduled had to take place. But we will be able to get really deeper into those. The issue of strategically positioning the NGB as per our bullet there, we and also talking to the ARP, we are aware of the policy direction that the department is taking in terms of wanting to have all the entities, especially the regulatory entities, to be effective and efficient in execution of their mandate. And that is the context in which we're talking about strategic repositioning aid. We're aware that the agency rationalization program was actually proposing that NGB be either subsumed into the department or and become an entity like your National Liquor Authority is currently. That is a regulator working within the department. So that's why we said we are aware of those outcomes as well. However, there's a policy review that's going on now, which I believe at the end is going to come here, going to lead to the amendment of the Act. Coming from there, we will then need to be ready to implement those outcomes. So the outcomes of the agency rationalization project really was to say, look at the structure of NGB, make it more efficient. Can it be a commission or a regulator like your national credit regulator, where it focuses on executing those functions? Does it really need the board? Things like that. So there were a number of questions. So strategic positioning means we need to then collaborate and work with the DTI up to a point where it will be strategically feasible to have the NGV more effective than it is currently. The issue of the staff organogram, yes, we are looking into that. One part of our plan is to see in the short term where can we get where we have constraints financially, how can we get assistance from DTI to have, especially in the area of the core, the compliance and the inspectorate area of NGB, so that we strengthen that in the meantime while we are sorting out the approval of the correct staff establishment going forward. It is correct that the NGB is not a big organization, but we are convinced that we will be able to rise to the occasion, given this opportunity that we have been given. The staff members that are there, from the interaction we've had and the one-on-ones we have with them in the meetings, there's much willingness to contribute in the turnaround of the entity. So we believe because of that interaction, and there was a bit of lack in terms of the direction that they are being given. And now that they have administrators, some have specifically and verbally expressed that they will give 100% support in terms of where we want to go. The matter around the list I've talked to, the temporary staff, it was seen by the entity as an easier way to get where, because the vacancy rate is high, as I've indicated, there was a high turnover. It was seen as a quicker way to have at least a body dealing with a certain functional area. But the appropriate, and also because of the budgetary constraint, we thought having a temporary person earning at a lower rate would actually save. But that had this intended consequence that it was through the procurement process, the money is budgeted for as part of the compensation of employees, but now, because of the way the person has been hired through that system, it gets allocated to the administrative cost. And operating costs, and that's the anomaly that we are currently looking at the budget and reworking the whole thing. We're working with the DTI to make sure that the budget is actually properly reprioritized. Yes, the skill in terms of what I was talking about with regard to
the gaming technologist, which is the kind of skill that we need in the compliance. We believe if we would have advertised that position, we would be able to solve in the market. The skill is available, I need to say, so we'll be able to solve that. And the question might be how scarce it is, and we will cross that bridge when we get to the point where we've advertised and see what the response is. But the skill is available in the market of gaming technologies. The issue of extra cost with regard to the audit fees, yes, we are aware that we need to take steps around it. We've in terms of the audit metrics that we've developed, we're also addressing the issue of where people were not necessarily following the processes. And those delays, I think we are aware who how they were caused, but we've put into place mechanism as I speak, where we have the stakeholder manager also being responsible for coordination of reporting, so that there's one contact in terms of the reporting to address the issue of delays that then resulted into unnecessary costs being incurred. What has happened in our interaction with the officials to find out? It was that the information was required from different individuals depending on their responsibilities. And there were those specifically, there was one area where the deadline, the turnaround of 5 days of Auditor General's submission of document was not adhered to. And probably also lack of understanding that if you're not adhering to that turnaround, later on it has got an effect and impact on the work of Auditor General itself, and then it does increase the hours, which is actually they charge their fees in terms of the hours that they put in. And as we said there, then there were more hours that they had to wait. I've talked to the code, the remuneration, and then the success with regards to the anti-money laundering and the TF or the terrorism funding. Why we highlighted this as a success is that our compliance unit has a working relation with the Financial Intelligence Center Act, and there they are scheduled meetings in which they interact. That information that was referred to, normally it's the purview of the FIC, the Financial Intelligence Center Act, but our cooperation with them and working with them assist to identify those which areas might be that people then divert and engage in money laundering activities through gambling, and that is why we said it was success in that we were able in all the quarters to be working with them in their quarterly meetings, and that's I think another one that's coming in terms of that, how we've highlighted. Talk to the remuneration of the board and the cost containment measures. I don't know if I've left anyone.
Chairperson, and honourable members, just to add to what my co-administrator has indicated, regarding the strategic repositioning of the NGB, we are looking forward to ensuring that the entity is able to actually deliver in terms of its mandate, and certain considerations we are currently looking into are basically, looking at what the Act in its current form requires of the entity. We have alluded to the fact that there's certain legislative reform in process, even from the policy level, but at this point in time, and certain gaps we may and challenges we're faced with is basically the entity being able to source the requisite skills. For example, in the Act, the establishment of the inspectorate to investigate and basically, for example, seize even illegal winnings, as an example. It's important for the NGB to be equipped with specialized investigators to ensure that that's part of the NGB's mandate is actually seen through. For example, getting special investigators, of caliber. For example, if one wants to benchmark the SIU SARS, people who are able to assist the NGB with the requisite skills for certain of the matters that need to be looked into, like illegal online gambling, you would need, for example, gaming technologists. People who are highly skilled in the IT field, understand the industry, and then they are able to assist. Further, another area that we've basically looked to is actually ensuring that we do see through establishing the inspectorate. The entity is further equipped more as a regulator. Further to that, the NGB also has a policy advisory mandate in that respect, which should be improved upon. With the name comes National Gambling Board. It's also imperative that the National Gambling Board is able to give guidance and policy advice to the provincial licensing authorities or the provincial gambling boards and be a lead in that respect, in collaboration with the minister. Another area that we're looking into is to also try and equip the entity to ensure that research that is embarked upon basically further enhances and supports transformation in the gambling industry. So that is something that one has to look into. And then basically also the matter that has been discussed and is at the Ministerial Policy Council meeting is the correct timing and balance regarding, at what point in time the NGB is able to regulate further modes of gambling, or whether it strengthens its enforcement with regards to, certain modes of gambling. So yet again, there's a balance one has to strike, considering also the social impact of the introduction of new forms of gambling, or even the current modes of gambling that are currently regulated and for which then licenses are awarded by the provincial authorities. So that's basically what I wanted to add based on from what my co-administrator has indicated.
Mr. Naidu, Group CFO.
No, thanks. I just thought maybe I should just talk to the finances of the institution. The department did work last year to look at their finances, notwithstanding the fact that they overcommitted on the operating leases. We in fact put together a balanced budget for them mid-year. So the co-administrators just need to investigate what had happened to that. But if you look at this deficit of 4 million rand, and if you take away the non-cash expenditure of depreciation and amortization, because that is already paid out, you actually got a 2 million rand deficit. And then if you look at all of the other expenditure where you can contain it, for example, your travel. Now let me just say, the travel, in terms of, I think the question was asked why it was so high. Some of it was because of the number of committee meetings, the number of board meetings that are taking place. That is why it's so high. But somebody just needs to dissect that to see what the different components of that expenditure was. But if you look at it very carefully, this organization can run on that budget. And we did that last year. Unfortunately, if you look at the AG's report and the management letter, there was numerous irregular expenditure, which the finance department didn't know about. So it's been committed a financial year end that we accrue all of that. So that's why we had this deficit that was shown at financial year end. It only came to light at financial year end because all of these amounts had to be accrued. Then the other question was asked about what funding is required going forward. We're in fact engaging with the institution at the moment. We met last Friday. Unfortunately, because of all the irregular expenditure, they need to now ascertain what value of irregular expenditure has been incurred and not paid for as yet. We have to get that and then work a budget going forward with the balance that's left over. We're in the process of working. We actually spent quite a few hours last week putting that together, and the administration should be submitting that fairly soon to the department. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Naidu. Ms. Scott?
Thank you, Chair. I think just to reiterate the point that this is the reason why the NGV, why the discussions around where they're located is also quite important in terms of the agency rationalization project. And it's also to contain funding and also to align much stronger with policy. And one of the recommendations that are coming through is to look at a regulator that's located within the department. The shape and form, I think, would be part of further discussions, but the intention certainly is that this is part of the DTI. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for the clarification. I must say that the couple of issues are still not clear to me as Chair, and I know that members themselves are going to raise further issues. If we could get an absolute clarification on the leases, we do need that. The other issue is around posts and employees, etc. There's a statement on page 16 that vacancies and critical posts, and that a broad statement, fill critical vacancies. We don't know what these critical ones are. Still related to that, we get on page 41, personnel cost by salary band. The total number of employees is 15. And then we get just further back again, permanent posts on page 37 of 21. And yet again on page 38, the vacant posts, we're not too sure there, but approved posts are 10 and the vacancies in 2012-2013 were 7. Now, that is absolute Greek to me. I can't work out what the situation is. Actually, how many people are employees there, number one. Number two, during this period covered by the annual report. Number three, the number of vacant posts, vacancies, and what are classified as critical vacancies. Can we get that? Because all of that does affect your financial arrangements. And the issue around the leases, because it seems to me as if there were two leases running concurrently, but again, this perhaps is not the case at all. If you would just clarify those issues, and then I'm coming across to the committee, please. Mr. Knight?
Yes, sir. Can I just maybe deal with the issue of the lease? Yes, sir. The NGB was located at the DTI. Because the GTI expanded and it required more space, the NGV had to cede that lease to the DTI. But they couldn't transfer it, they had to cede it. So they had to continue to pay that lease and recover those monies from the DTI, which is shown as expenditure here. Okay, and the income is shown, the money they get from the DTI is shown as income. If you said 1.9 million then on the income, part of that is the funds they receive from the DTI. That is the two leases that are running concurrently.
Consider that bad practice.
No, Chair, let me put it into context. The DTI is in the process of acquiring that building which is part of the campus. Okay? But it was built by a private company. So we couldn't transfer that lease immediately. It was a process that was being done through National Treasury. So once we take over, the NGB will be released of that obligation.
Thank you very much. Now that is clarification on the leases, and Mr. Beneni, is it? Are you going to be giving us clarification on the employee structure?
If you allow me, Chair, I would talk to the status as it stands. That the staff establishment of NGV.
I would like you to talk to the status that this annual report covers. That is what we've got in front of us, this annual report. And that period, we know when it covers. All right?
staff establishment, as indicated on page 16, the 27, should be the staff establishment as at the end of March 2014. Currently, spending at around 80. The ceiling, the positions that are filled now, and I must just remember this one. Employees at the NGD currently. As at the end of March, it was 16, because I think the head of compliance was still there, only left in September. So it was 16. The table there might have been during the proofreading and stuff, I think, confused a bit, because the simple way on calculating the percentage is it's the number of vacancies over the total number of posts. And I think that's why it's misleading in terms of that 6%, which actually should be higher than that. And we are aware in our report that I indicated when I was presenting, when we were doing the assessment of staff, it was actually at close to 50% the vacancy rate as we said. So yes, I think there was just that mixing of those figures at the end. So that's a clarity.
Well, what I'm going to ask you to do is to send us the edited version to us, and may we have that by Thursday, indicating the annual report period and now, as you put it, you know. And we've got the lease issue sorted, you know, clarified, so that's quite useful itself. Now, I'm going to come across to the committee. Yes, Honourable McPherson? Honourable Hill-Lewis?
Thank you. Chair, I just want to go through just a bit of a timeline, because I think it's important that we have this on the record and that the committee understands this particular issue and why we're pressing it. On the 22nd of September, I wrote to your office requesting that in terms of Rule 138, that the Minister appears before the committee to give reasons that informed his decision and to suspend the board, how long the forensic investigation would take, etc. We then held a meeting on the 25th of September where we had some robust debates around the issue, and you said that there was no need to request the minister to appeal in terms of that rule because the issue would be dealt under the National Gambling Board's annual report. You recall that. Okay. You then wrote back to me on the 26th of September to refresh my memory and said that 1 hour would be allocated to the NRCS, followed by 3 hours of the gambling issue. The minister would be invited along with the MEC and the NCOP Select Committee, and that the Parliamentary Committee Secretary would ascertain the availability of all role players. We heard nothing further about that. On the 22nd of September, Mr. Villeni, the spokesperson for the Minister Daly, Sidwell Madupe, said that the Minister had taken the decision to suspend the board and appoint two administrators because the forensic investigation will mainly cover the assets of the National Gambling Board. So the Minister gave a hint as to why the following actions. So I find it bizarre, to put it quite mildly, that you have no idea why you are where you are. I find it strange, to be perfectly honest, that you are administrating an entity that you have no idea why you were put there in the first place. And there are two possible outcomes. One is that you just really don't know, or you do know but you're unwilling to tell us,
or that the minister has irresponsibly appointed you to do a job that you have no idea why you're there for in the first place. And she,
you are moving just towards crossing.
Sure, but I haven't crossed it yet, and I won't. And this is what greatly concerns me, Mr. Bellini, is that you have, on the record, you've told us you don't know the reasons why the board was suspended. I'm not too sure if you do or don't read the newspapers, but his spokesperson had initially told us, he'd given us a hint, that it has something to do with the assets of the National Gambling Board. So I think that we are in a predicament here. We were told that we were going to deal with this issue today under this particular thing. The minister obviously is not here because he's in the UK. I do know that. The administrator, who I would believe would know the reasons, is unable to tell us. And we're at this juncture where we as a parliamentary portfolio committee are supposed to be doing oversight of the entities that fall underneath us, and we simply can't do it because nobody knows what is going on. That is a huge concern for me, Chair.
Let me address this. I now have a copy of the letter that I referred to at the time. You're quite correct about the emails and the official responses you received, which were done in good faith, because as you know, at our last committee meeting, we pointed out that we would be working with the liaison officer of DTI, Parliamentary Liaison Officer Ms. Naidu, to ascertain the availability. And also we hoped to get the NCOP Select Committee, our sister committee here. We were informed that Dr. Rob Davies, and I read the letter out at the time, has temporarily removed the board of the National Gambling Board, NGB, on the 9th, pending a forensic investigation. No assets were alluded to in the letter. He has appointed two administrators, and I think this addresses the issue that you're raising, to oversee the day-to-day affairs, not to do the forensic issues, but simply the day-to-day affairs, to keep it going, in other words. And then there was an explanation as to some background of them. Both administrators are experienced public servants who occupy senior positions within the Department of Trade and Industry prior to their appointment as administrators. That is the communication which I received.
What is the date of that letter, Jim?
Pardon?
The date of that letter?
The date of the letter is the 21st, which arrived. In fact, it was probably written on the 20th because it arrived at the crack of dawn on the 21st. Now, the other issue here is with reference to your emails, we did have a program which was approved, which made these requests. It later turned out that these dates were not going to be available, and in fact, I was only informed of that after responding to your email, and after we had the secretary of the committee and myself with Manco had changed the program yet again. We still called you on that matter, indicating this is what would happen. It transpired somewhat later that the minister was, I think I was informed he had to accompany the president somewhere. So these were issues that arose after we had responded and after the minister had agreed to come. So these things do happen from time to time, just so that you do know. But what I have already said here, and I think the committee is entitled to this, is to get some explanation as far as we can as to why. Now, the minister did agree that this would be possible. The only thing I said to Mr. Herman, let's not catch him on a flight. Let us request, probably Friday is a working day for us. Let us request our written response by Friday on the matter. that does not preclude the date that has already been agreed to, the 6th of November. And most unfortunately, this is largely due, I understand, to the travelling arrangements of the minister, which have come out. So I think everyone in the committee, going back even last year and studying this annual report, we are concerned about what went on at the National Gambling Board, especially the leadership issues, which the Auditor General himself pointed out in his report. And as soon as you have leadership issues, you've got other issues. The issues around the vacancies, the employment, many of these issues appear not to have been correctly pursued by previous people working there. And the fact that you are now there, since when are you there, Mr. Bellini? When was your appointment?
Chair, we were at the NGB from the beginning of September, the 4th of September.
So the 4th of September to now, you've been there 6 weeks. And I think that it is a serious matter with which you are seized. But on Friday, the committee will be in a better position to clarify what the suspension, what led to the suspension per se, other than the fact that there is a forensic inquiry. And we do know, I should say to yourself, Honourable Matthiasen, that these forensic inquiries, they do take some time, but our previous experience has been that the minister keeps us on board and doesn't wait for the final position to be known in this regard. So I look forward to receiving that communication on Friday, which we will share with the committee itself. The reason for that, I need to indicate to the administrators, this is the budget review recommendation report. This is what this is. And we require to have that information before we can complete the process. So unfortunately, it won't be able to wait simply until the 6th of September. November. Right. One other issue there, well, apart from that one, I think we've dealt with it. I should indicate to the committee, we have had another operational challenge come up which affects the program, and we'll address that after you've made sure you've tackled everything you can or wish to tackle now with the National Gambling Board. Have you exhausted your comments, your questions? Yes, Honourable Hilda.
Thank you. still in place? How long is the NGV committed to that lease for? And how much space is being left? Because the kind of back of the envelope price calculations that I've just done suggest that this is an extremely expensive lease for a size of organization like the NGV. And then lastly, Chair, I will say this again when the Minister does eventually come to discuss this with us, but the Minister made this decision on the 9th of September. He sent you a letter on the 21st of September and announced it publicly on the same day. And the letter that he sent you was frankly perfunctory because it is exactly word for word the same public media statement that he released on the same day. So it was no additional insight into why he had made the decision. In fact, the public statement by Mr. Madube actually had more insight than the letter that you've just read us. So I'd like to know, perhaps the COO knows the reason for this, otherwise we'll have to put this question to the Minister, but why was there the delay in the announcement, and why was there the delay in informing Parliament? That is also unacceptable.
Yes, I think what we'll do with both those questions, Honourable Hill-Lewis, we'll ask the committee secretary to refer those, because we've already asked for a response in writing, and we'll add those questions to the matter. And when it comes, I think then if you wish to make any other comments, you may do so now, Ms. Maleni.
Thank you, Chair. Through you, I need to just mention that I have indicated that I know the appointment letter that states what I am supposed to do. What I indicated, not being aware of is the executive decision that the Minister has taken. I even indicated I was going to refer it to the DTI, which I didn't refer to the DTI because the GCOO had already responded to it. The question was not about what my appointment letter is, which I would have responded to. I have an appointment letter. I'm appointed in terms of Section 49 of the Public Finance Management Act. And as indicated, we are seeing to the day-to-day. In my responses to this Honourable Committee, I have indicated all the day-to-day issues that we are already taking issue on. We have issued a report. I am not quite sure, Chairperson, if probably I have not expressed myself in as clear as that, and I will accept I'm not English. My home language is Sotho. I would have said that in Sotho, more professional.
I think it's very clear that you are aware of your duties. You were not asked to carry out a forensic investigation. Ms. Scott?
Thank you, Chair. The DTI's internal audit, the Coast Force partner, Grant Thornton, is handling the forensic investigation. The DTI's internal audit unit has a co-source partner that does our forensic investigation. It's Grant Thornton. They are currently busy with the investigation that the Minister has initiated. I just want to indicate, Chair, that we are aware that a protective disclosure has been made to the Minister. And I think that is the reason why we have not been able to respond to these matters. And we will ask the Minister to formally address all of these questions in his letter to the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Now, we do appreciate that. But I hope we're all on board. What we're saying here in the committee is that we are writing to the Minister requesting a response on Friday and just taking us into his confidence and clarifying for us the reason for the suspension of the board, all right, the entire board, number one. Number two, we would also like to get further clarification, and we mentioned a couple of items we have already noted here today, and that the committee is of the opinion that the suspension of the board has made it extremely difficult to address the budgetary issues and the performance of the department in the absence of the suspended board, notwithstanding that we do have both administrators here with us today. that the letter does not replace our request to meet with him on the 6th, but is a requirement we need to address the BRRR process. As simple as that, and if we could have that letter by Friday. On the remaining issues, of course, I think we've dealt with them, and I think it's on record that the committee is not happy about the state of affairs, and that's to put it mildly, but that we shall pursue it further, and we would appreciate the full cooperation of the department in the matter. And I think then that addresses things. Yes.
On the issue of the remaining term of the lease?
Not about that, but I did say a couple of other bullets. That just the remaining issue on the lease itself, of course, I'm not aware how you did the calculations, but I think that's a moot point. Let's just get the clarification there. All right. Thank you. In that case, we would like to thank the administrators who have just been in the addressing matters of the gambling board for 6 weeks, not very long. And we wish you well, and we certainly would appreciate it, if possible, I'm looking at the DTI as well as yourselves, if when we do get this letter, it would be advisable for you to be here, because we've actually got a very tight schedule. We're supposed to have ironed this up out today. Thank you. So I know the minister will not be here on Friday. Am I correct? Is that all? And just before we take, so thank you very much for coming here this morning. Just before we take our tea break, I spoke about a programming issue. Before we went on constituency, our program was passed. It came to my attention this morning that Thursday has once again been reinstated as a caucus day for all parties. And that is not something, and on a caucus day, unless you are already overseas, we can't hold an oversight or a committee meeting on that day. So, most regrettably, we're going to have to cancel the visit to Salzana, SEZ, Kalani Gardens, Acacia Pharmaceuticals. We may be able to fit in the letter on one of our days like Tuesday and see what we can do there for Friday. But I can't give you a date until Mr. Hermans has consulted the program. So on Thursday, we will not be conducting the oversight. I hope that's quite clear. Right. Can we take a short tea break and leave back at 11? Thank you.